Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, brethren of all ages, that's right, the time has come once again for the gathering of the parish of the Patriots. I'm excited. I'm always excited. As always, it's like this build-up for me personally every week. It's like, it's time. The time hath come. We've set everything up in the prestigious recording studios, a.k.a. my bedroom. Works really good. And, it's time. It's time for our weekly visits. I'm glad you joined. Whatever's brought us all together, whether you're a regular member of the congregation or a new listener, I'm glad you're here. If you are a new listener, we do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's about the halfway mark of the show. Look forward to it. Don't skip it. Skip at your own risk. This is the 184th time we've done this. Is that? I got to look again. Yeah, no, 184. We're closing in. We're closing in on 200. Good stuff. This show is supported by your voluntary support. You know, everybody winds up. I realize if y'all listen to a lot of different shows, pretty much all of them have their hand out to a certain degree or another. This show's no different. We don't have hidden content, nothing behind paywalls. There's no subscriber stuff or anything such as that. I mean, I'm not downing people who do that in the least, but that's not the way we do it here. It's all out there for you. We just pass the offering plate around and ask that you put a few bucks in. You know, I'm not asking you to give up your life savings, but you know, if everybody listens to the show, send a few dollars, it'd sure help. It makes a difference, and it would be appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, go to the slow scroll to the bottom of the description page. You know, if you go to the very, very bottom of the page, there's information down there where you can support Radio Albion, the network itself. If you're wanting to support, which is good, if you're wanting to support the show itself, specifically for the show, slow scroll past the description, which pretty much nobody reads, and you'll see that we got snail mail, we got Bitcoin, we got Monero, got email address down there to drop your notes. And if you send Monero, please send it to this current address. I've been using this address, by the way, for, you know, a little bit now. But if you've like saved an address from 6 months ago, don't use that. Use this current address. Way it gets to me. If you have a weirdo cryptocurrency too, drop me an email, because I it won't be no big deal. I can get you an address for that more than likely. And like I say, it is all appreciated. Which brings us, yes, listener supporter mailbag. GPD shows are getting better every time, Mr. T. Well, I like to think so. You know, I at least want to think that they're not getting. I at least want to believe they're not getting worse. Some weeks I wonder, is it really getting better? Is it getting worse? Grandpa Dan, my dad was a very smart man. He was the oldest boy. And after eighth grade, you know, went to the farm to work. He was very smart, but came from a very poor family. He built every house I lived in as a youth. He built himself 5 houses and did everything, plumbing, electrical, roofing, everything. He also fixed our cars and motorcycles and all our neighbors' cars and motorcycles. He also built kitchen cabinets for people. In the 60s, he realized that the Democrats did nothing but make things worse for the middle class or poor. So we tried Independent and Team R and found no one was there for us. He was much smarter than most college graduates. He worked for, I'll just say, a large company. In the 60s, they had a job which required you to read blueprints. He posted for the job and they laughed at him and said, you're going up against college graduates. Well, they all took the test and he was the only one to pass. But they left the job unfilled because they would not let a person with only an eighth grade education have it. Love the shows. Keep up the good work. Stay strong. I'm praying for you, Debbie. And it is very much appreciated. Thank you very much, Debbie. And you've touched on something that's one of my pet peeves, and that's credentialism. I hate it. This whole thing. Because you have all of these people with these, I mean, if you see these clips people post up or whatever, like the libs of TikTok. The libs of TikTok account, you know, posts up these various shit libs, you know, posting themselves on TikTok and then being offended because, you know, people are looking at their content they put on TikTok, which makes no sense. But anyway, but you look at these people, and predominantly these videos will be of these teachers, and they all fit the same paradigm, virtually all of them. 20-something-year-old, sometimes a little bold, but on average, 20-something-year-old white female. She has her hair dyed some ridiculous color, like I don't know, like she's trying to be an anime girl, only she's definitely not waifu material. huge big glasses. A lot of times I had the big glasses. And of course, they always sit there and spew all of this nonsense, all of the anti-white rhetoric, you know. And it's always funny because they're virtually every single one of them are white. I mean, a few will be Jewish, but generally speaking, they'll all be white. And they'll sit there and they're virtue signaling against themselves. It never dawns on them how ridiculous they look. I mean, I doubt that like black people are really looking at their accounts. But if they were, they would be like, look at this. You know, you got this crazy white bitch. And she's going on and on about, you know, how she's going to teach her students to hate white people. And she's white. She's doing a good job because her students are going to hate her. Very specifically. But you know, the one thing, you know, and like I say, you see these accounts and they're always the ones talking about they're going to promote all of the gay anal fisting for their second graders. But you know, the one thing they all have in common, they all are certified. They all have the degree. They wouldn't have got a teacher job if they didn't have a degree. People such as you, me, us regular people, we don't get to go teach the kids because they say, oh, you got to have a degree. You got to be educated. But yet we look at the educated people they're putting out here to do this job. And what do we get? These freaks of nature. These are not normal people. You know, these are not normal people. They obviously have something wrong with them. But they've got the piece of paper. They got a piece of paper that says, yes, they are certified to teach your second grader about gay anal fisting with a rainbow flag. You stick the whole flag, roll it up. Whole flag and everything, kiddos, line up. We're going to shove it up your ass. That's what they're doing. That's what they're teaching. But they have the piece of paper. People with common sense, people with knowledge, they're not welcome. It's a screening process. It's necessary. These colleges, you know, 100 years ago is different. Not very many people went to university. Yeah, because it was just for the very high IQP. And that's not the case now. The university's only sole function is to indoctrinate people. And for a bonus point, by brainwashing people and teaching them not how to think, but what to think, they also get them to go into debt and pay them all of this money to make them into NPC drones. It's a great racket. It really is. It's a great racket. But you see, it's not because the piece of paper makes them more qualified. No. I mean, 100 years ago, yes, it would have. But as you've pointed out, as the listeners pointed out in their letter, even as far back as, you know, 50, 60 years ago, it had already been, you know, you see the handwriting on the wall. It's to make sure you've gone through the program. There's nothing to do with what you know or if you can do the job. Credentialism is something that really absolutely is a part of this failing society that when the whole thing goes away, we've got to be sure that it dies for good and doesn't come back. I mean, there's nothing wrong with people, you know, focusing and becoming academics and furthering their education, but that should always be something that's reserved for a very few people. You see a job. I've seen job postings for manager at a fast food restaurant, and it'll say requires a college degree, really, to manage McDonald's. Does anybody really think that's necessary? One of my favorite stories I always tell back in the 90s, I looked at a job posting one time for like a park ranger, for one of the state parks, because all the park rangers do is either sit at the gate and take your money, or they'd ride around on a four-wheeler and cut tree limbs with a chainsaw out on the trail, things such as that. You know, anybody could do that. It's not a tough job. Like 2 days at the most of on-the-job training, and you're ready for that job. And yet what? Requires a college degree. They didn't care if it's a college degree in basket weaving, but you had to have some sort of college degree. Well, that means that it has nothing to do with you've got to have a higher level of knowledge about cutting tree limbs with a chainsaw. Didn't require a bachelor's degree in chainsaw operation. It's all about requiring that you go through the indoctrination. It really is. That's the point. It requires that you go through the indoctrination. You've gone through the brainwashing program. You understand your role is to regurgitate the same lines back. That's your role. Your role is to, it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. You know, you're trained that you're supposed to say what you're supposed to say. You know what you're supposed to say and you repeat that back. But it's probably bonus points if you actually don't believe in any of that shit, but you do go along with the program. You see where that would tie in with the masks and the COVID and all the rest of the lies and nonsense. People are just trained. You regurgitate. You understand. You get the clues, the cues of what you're supposed to say, and that's what you say back. Bonus points if you don't really believe it, because it means you submit that much harder. It's not just indoctrination they teach you at college. They teach you to submit. They teach you that even if you know it's bullshit, you submit and regurgitate the lie because that's what it takes to pass. You see, that's the whole passing and failing of it, isn't it? If you don't say it, if you don't say the right stuff, you don't regurgitate the lines that you're supposed to say, then you fail and they eliminate you. And then you can't go apply for those jobs because you see, you've been called out. You're a free thinker. You think too much. You're an independent thinker. We can't have you. We need people that will, that, you know, it takes a special breed of person that want to teach kids how to stick a rainbow flag up their ass in the name of pride for second graders. And if you're a free thinker, if you have independent thought, you're probably not going to do that. A special kind, a special breed. Yeah. Anyway. It's always tiring too, dealing with those people because they're always so smug. You know, they're so smug and act like they're so much smarter than you. They're just drones. That's all they are. They're just drones. But that's how the system is rigged up. They want to, you know, it's a carrot stick sort of thing. They're training people. They've trained people. You can't have access to a job. Whether you can do the job or not is irrelevant. It's about whether or not you understand that there's certain things you're allowed to say, certain things you're not allowed to say, and you're supposed to, if prompted with a question, this is the rehearsed line. Truth doesn't enter into the equation. You just remember what you're supposed to say. It's all training. It all comes in handy. You got these drones and because they think they know and they don't know. They think they're knowing, but they don't knowing. And you see them and so many of them become like politicians, or so many of them think they understand. That's why people don't understand anything about the world around them, or they can't make sense. You watch the charade of a political system we have, and our Team D versus Team R political system. And I was thinking about how, you know, you have Team D who would sit here and demonize and talk about how Russia is this great threat to America. Russia is a great threat to America. And then Team R will sit here and to a lesser, you know, to a minimal extent say, well, Russia is not that big of a threat to the U.S. It's China. China is the big threat. And then they're just like two monkeys dancing around with the cup, doing a show, taking your money. But I was saying, you know, this whole globalism thing, you know, it is an extension of the unipolar idea, the unipolar world. In other words, globalism as we see it today is centered around the existence of the U.S. as the center, as the power center of the world. I mean, it's not about globalism in the sense that, you know, the power gets dispersed across the entire planet. You know, and you get these people and they have that idea, you know, like globalism means all of a sudden, you know, I don't know, we're going to be taking orders from Beijing or Moscow. If anything, we're taking orders from Tel Aviv. But those people generally won't see that for sure. But but no, globalism, as it's being promoted, as it's being attempted to being enacted today, it's centered around the unipolar world. In other words, as the U.S. is the center point. And that's the problem with Russia and China, is that's what's in opposition right now to this unipolar world. In other words, to enact the Great Reset, as they imagine the you know, one world type of thing, it's got to, that's centered around the U.S. the U.S. falls apart, and it is, the U.S. empire falls apart and is unable to project its hegemony across the world, the whole one world wet dream goes, once again, gets flushed down the toilet. And look, people got to get rid of their sports ball mentality. This doesn't mean you got to love China. It doesn't mean you got to love Russia or Putin. But if you hate the globalist one world wet dream, the World Economic Forum nonsense, if you hate that, then you got to understand China and Russia are what stand in the way of that. I mean, it's just that clear and simple. If you snapped your fingers today and Russia and China were taken off the chessboard, you would be living in the middle of the World Economic Forum Great Reset wet dream. And it's all coming apart. It's become so unorganized, and you've obviously got these different factions pushing these different agendas, the organizational level is just, it's really coming apart. I see that. For instance, just as a highlight of this, you know, because you've got these different agendas. Like, for instance, in Europe, you know, you have a country, we're going to use France, and we're going to pick on France. You have France, and for the last, say, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they've, you know, as part of the anti-white agenda, they have imported the entirety of the Middle East and Africa, sub-Sahara Africa. We remember years ago seeing all these migrants, and they'd tell us they're women and children, and you'd look at the pictures, and they were all military, you know, military fighting age young men. And they brought them all in, and people were complaining about it, but it didn't matter because diversity is our strength, and they were going to pay the pensions or whatever gibberish. But it was the anti-white thing. You know, they were going to just destroy the demographics and crush white people, grind them to dust once and for all by importing all of these young Middle Eastern men and promising them white women and welfare forever. And new cars, and they're going to live the dream. And they imported all these people. Well, now you fast forward to today, and you've got Macron comes out, and he makes a speech, and he talks about as the French people. I did an Italian. I don't do a very good French. Sorry about that. No offense. Sorry, Italy. You're not much better anyway. He comes out, Macron comes out, and he does a speech and talks about, well, we have to accept that this is the end of abundance. We're entering a new age, and we're going to have to basically freeze to death and go hungry in the name of freedom, which means the Ukraine, which means the conflict with Russia. And there's several, he's not the only one. See, winter is coming, and you've got all these Western European leaders are starting to get real nervous because winter is coming. Now, he comes out, and like I said, we're just going to use him as our example. He comes out and talks about this is the age, end of the age of abundance. We have to accept that we're going to have to make sacrifices for freedom in our democracy and our way of life and who we are and the rules-based order, whatever the hell gibberish they can think up. And I was thinking about this, and you know, if France, if Western Europe was still predominantly populated by gullible, stupid-ass white people, gullible, idealistic, you know, if it's still predominantly popular, they might swallow it. They might would go along with it. Might could convince them that this totally worth, you know, Ukraine anal freedom or whatever the hell to freeze. But let me tell you what, all of those young, fighting age men they imported from the Middle East and sub-Sahara Africa, they're not stupid enough to buy into that shit. They're not going to freeze this winter because they're going to be lighting cities on fire to warm themselves up. You see, you've got all these, they do all these, they're doing all these different things, and yet there's no, it's like they're not coordinating a big plan anymore. We'll import the Middle East and Africa and grind white people to dust and make everything diverse. But we're also going to do this whole Great Reset One World Government thing, but that requires doing something about Russia. And lo and behold, now, who could have predicted that the fact that Western Europe is dependent on Russian gas, and we could have unrest this winter. Well, let's sell it to the gullible. Oh, wait a minute. We've replaced the population that we might have potentially been able to convince to go along with this nonsense. We've replaced them with people that aren't going to buy any of that shit. And they're just going to start setting cars on fire. Really? I mean, these people aren't that smart. They have a lot of power, but they're not that smart. They've imported the Middle East and Africa and primarily young men of fighting age. And they're still, by the way, continuing to do so. It's not like they hit a spot and was like, whoa, 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 this is a bad idea. Well, like they did that. But now they're sitting there trying to talk a bunch of a bunch of idealistic gibberish about we got to make sacrifices for freedom in the Ukraine and freeze to death and go hungry. You know, these guys are probably already mad because they're not necessarily getting all of the free coochie they thought they were going to get and welfare. And now you're going to tell them, oh, you're going to have to go hungry and freeze. They ain't about freezing. They're from sub-Saharan Africa. They're from the Middle East. They're about being warm. Something I share in common with them. I'm about being warm. I'm not about being cold. They're going to be warming themselves up by car fires. And you see some of these nominal, quote unquote, leaders of these countries. And they are. They're starting to get nervous talking about, you know, we could have riots. You think so? You have no-go zones all over Paris, all around Paris now, where the police don't even go in there. They're basically ruled by Sharia law. And you're going to cut their heat off. This is going to be entertaining to say the least. You're going to cut these people's heat. All the no-go zones. Sweden, Germany, all these areas. And you're going to cut their heat off. People that ain't about being, people that are like me, that they ain't about being cold. It's amazing. It's amazing. They don't know what to do. They all these people work on all these different agendas, these different plans. It's going to be an interesting winter. It is. It's going to be an interesting. It's going to be an interesting days coming. It's interesting because you know people all over the world see that the empire is failing, you know, except for people that live in the empire. I mean, Americans are just now starting to register them with that something might be a little bit wrong. Something could be a little amiss. Something maybe just not quite working right. But the rest of the world sees the empire in decline. And it's funny, I read a story, I'm recording this on Saturday, so I read the story yesterday, last night. And some U.S. representative was over there telling Serbia, because yes, we're messing with Serbia now as another way to try to mess with Russia. And they told Serbia, they said, look, it's time that y'all just accept the independence of Kosovo and give up your land. You need to do that. Give up Kosovo and come into the embrace of the prosperity of the European Union. You see, embrace global homo. He goes over there and says, it's okay because, yes, you're going to give up Kosovo. But you know what? You're actually going to be united because you're going to come under the uniting umbrella of the European Union. It's going to be great. You're going to have economic prosperity. You're going to have welfare and hookers. You're going to have welfare and coochie, all of it you want. It's basically the same promise. The devil makes the same promises. You're going to be an economic prosperity. Things are going to be great. Just come and embrace the European Union. But you've got to give up your land to the Albanians. First, you got to do that. And then you're going to have economic. Like, do they think that nobody has seen what they did to all these different countries, you know? Like, everybody can see that the European, the West, the global homo, the empire, you know, they can see it's on the decline. You know, I mean, the EU may not exist after winter. It depends on how much unrest there is. They may not exist as much of an entity as a functioning entity after this winter. I don't know. I'm not really making that prediction, but it's in the possibility of it isn't zero. It could happen. They're sitting around wondering, talking about their shutting down their manufacturing. They're talking about people ain't going to be able to heat their homes. And this asshole has the nerve to go over there and tell them, hey, come into our warm embrace of economic prosperity. You know, it's just like, I don't know. It's like a crackhead saying, you know, come into the warm embrace of my great decision making. Let me make your decisions for you because I'm obviously so good at it myself. These people, they do. They live in such a bubble that they think everybody else in the world lives in the same bubble. You know, they probably think that the entire government of Serbia sits around and watches CNN or MSNBC and gets their news from the U.S. I don't know. It's amazing. Disconnect. Come join the economic prosperity of the European Union. Yes, that's obviously the way of the future. And it's tough. You know, it's tough for smaller countries. It is because smaller countries, and they're always going to, you know, be a protectorate of or subjugated by, you know, or have to have some sort of relation with a bigger country. It doesn't mean you give up all of your independence, but that's just the way the world functions. It is. It's just the way the world works. I mean, take Belarus as an example. They're an independent country. My man, Lukashenko, one of my favorite national leader. He's running his country. He's doing his own independent thing. But he's basically, his country is a protectorate, you know, of is protected by Russia. It is close aligned. In other words, if the U.S. invaded Belarus tomorrow, it would be on with Russia. I mean, that's, you know, it's not like one, you know, when the U.S. goes over and tries to say that if China does something to Taiwan, the U.S. is going to engage China in conflict. And literally everyone on the face of the planet, except for a few brain dead NPCs, everybody knows that's bullshit. The U.S. isn't going to go engage in direct battle with the People's Liberation Army. The People's Liberation Army. They're not going to do that because they'll lose and they'll get their asses kicked. Then they know this. It's not like that. Everybody knows. Look, if the U.S., if NATO invaded Belarus today, Russia would be there. I mean, it wouldn't be sitting around going, well, maybe we should think about some other options. I mean, it would just be on. And that's where Belarus, I mean, yes, they have their own military. They won't sit around and think, well, Russia take care of it all because they want to maintain their independence. But you see, they have that backing. And that's the way it is. Well, I mean, that's the way it is. And that's not a new thing. Smaller countries have got to have some sort of affiliation with a larger country. That's what a smart leader does. Because if you get affiliated with a more or less friendly, larger country, then you don't get option two, which is to be subjugated by the larger country. Then you don't have any freedom. Then you basically have a boot on your neck. You basically do things like detonate your entire economy and your manufacturing base because the bigger country across on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean tells you that's what you've got to do. You won't go out and worry that your palace is going to be on fire this winter and people are going to be roasting marshmallows, you know, in your living room. Because you don't have to worry about that because you get to follow those orders from the U.S., either ally yourself with a nation and maintain a certain amount of your independence, or you're subjugated by larger nations. That's how it always has worked. That's the way it works for smaller countries. That's just the way of the world. And you see a lot, I mean, people know this, you know, people run these smaller countries, they understand this, you watch them and they're making these, you know, a lot of times they seem like they're dancing back and forth. This is because they're a little country. You know, the U.S. is extremely violent. You know, I mean, if a little country, like say, if you're a little country in Asia and the U.S. shows up and starts talking about they want you to do this and do that and we'll offer you this bag of candy if you'll antagonize China. I mean, you can't just tell them to shove it up their ass because they could do a regime change on you tomorrow. So you have to kind of dance along with that. But then at the same time, you get on the phone with Z and you're like, you know, bro, we cool, right? I mean, do you understand the position I'm in? And most of the time, Chairman Z is going to understand the position you're in. You know, you got to try to balance that somehow. It's a tough position. It's an enviable position, being one of these leaders of these little countries. The U.S. gets their eye on you. They'll sit there and regime change you. And that means killing you, by the way. Not just like, you know, rigging an election and getting you thrown out. They can stage a revolution. They can just stage a coup and kill you. I laugh when these people have the nerve to talk about, you know, oh, they've been, one of the things they say, they when China goes in, because China, unlike the U.S., that goes in with, you know, threats of violence and murdering whoever's trying to run their little country, wherever they are in the world. You know, China goes in with their checkbook. If I had to deal with one or the other, that's what I would prefer to deal with. Like I say, these people that run these small countries, regardless of where they're at, when they get caught up in these things, they have to be careful. The U.S. is very violent. And like I say, they can pull a coup and get you executed, you and your entire family brutally murdered, and they won't bat an eye. When China comes in, they come in with their checkbook. They're like, look, we want this stuff you have. Oil, minerals, resources, whatever it is. We want it. Y'all ain't doing nothing with it anyway. We got our checkbook right here. Let's make a deal. And then these people have the nerve to come out, and you see them on TV, and have the nerve to come out and talk about, oh yeah, China's going around trapping these people in debts. They're doing a debt trap. Really? From the usury states of America, the global center of usury is talking about how China is tricking these countries into a debt trap. You got the IMF, which their sole purpose is to go around the world and make sure everybody stays in debt on a national level, on a, you know, government level. They go around the world and make sure everybody's in debt so that then they can tell them they've got to import the Middle East, or they tell them they've got to promote gay anal pride. Because as the Bible says, the borrower is subject to the lender. Their entire role is to go around and make sure that they've got people trapped in usurious debt, governments trapped in usurious debt. And then they have the nerve to sit around, oh, China's pulling a sneaky here. How dare they bring a checkbook to the negotiating table? That's not the way it's supposed to work. Anyway, no, people, they do. People around the world understand that this system is on slice. Like, it's just still very dangerous. You know, you see countries that have more wealth and power starting to move away now from it and move towards Russia and China and try to make sure they got at least 1 foot off of the sinking ship. But the U.S., the West, the global homo regime is still extremely dangerous. And so, you know, they've got to be careful. They've got to try to keep themselves positioned to where they don't go down with the ship. You know, but at the same time, they can't jump too soon or they'll get blown out of the water. It is going to be interesting. It continues to be interesting times. It's going to be interesting times going forward. I fear, you know, that as this falls apart, their global plans fall apart. They're going to turn inward and direct their rage and their anger and their frustration here at home. And it's going to get really, really bad for everybody, for lots and lots of people, virtually everyone that lives here. You got the people that, you know, think to support it because they're morons. Because they support it because they think they will be exempted from it, you know? And they're going to find out they're not exempt. It's going to get really bad, I think. Really bad here as their global ambitions come apart. We need to go ahead and wrap up this part of the show and get into the Christian-specific segment. Like I say, if you're new, I probably wouldn't want to hang out and listen to it, but we do put it in a separate part, so if people don't want to hang out and listen to that, they don't have to. But, you know, it's still a fun and entertaining part. It's not like sitting through a boring church service, or I think it isn't. It's one of those if I do say so myself, but that's up to you. But, yeah, you know, so we're going to go ahead. We're going to get off into it. So, as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. For a Christian-specific segment this week, we're going to be a lot less preachy and a little more just random, just random rambling discussion, because you probably didn't get enough of that in the first part of the show. So we're just going to keep the rambling in a, but just the difference being in a Christian-specific, in a Christian-specific manner, because I've jotted a few things down here, and honestly, it's all random. It's more random than actually, like, you know, we're preaching a sermon this week. It's still Christ-centric. It is truth-centric. It is still our Christian-specific segment. But maybe it'll be a little more fun. I don't know. I mean, we just kind of go with what I feel like. I was thinking, funny thing, and I'm sharing this with y'all so you can share it. Yes, that's right. There will be no copyright claims on this, so you feel free to use this. But I was thinking this the other day, and I thought I'd share it with y'all. You can use this the next time you deal with one of these people that think, you know, they're convinced. You know the ones I'm talking about. They're convinced that, you know, the modern nation state of Israel is Israel of the Old Testament because same name, you know. You know the ones I'm talking about. I was thinking this the other day as something y'all can use, and I will use, and y'all can use as well. When you run into these people, you know, but God said he was going to bless Israel, so we need to send another $4 billion to help Israel. You point out that by that same logic, every Mexican named Jesus is our Lord and Savior. Because no, really, it is. By their so-called logic, because the modern nation state of Israel, which honestly I personally like to refer to as the abomination that causes desolation, by their so-called reasoning, because it has the same name, this is scary. You know, it really is. And it highlights how the preacher class, however you want to refer to it, has truly failed, because it is incumbent upon the church and to narrow it down even more upon the preachers, reverends, priests, whatever term you want to use, you know, to instruct the people in these things. And it's obviously a failure when you have so many Christian believers who think because they can, you know, they turn on the news or look on this on a map or whatever, and they see Israel written on the map, that means it's the same thing as when they open up their Bibles and God talks about he's doing this, that, or the other for Israel. I mean, it really is. It just speaks volumes. And of course, you've got preachers that have whole cashed in on this whole thing. And it's so obvious, you know. I mean, it's so obvious that they're getting paid somewhere, somehow. You know, they always seem to be doing real well. Ever notice that? I haven't noticed any poor preachers talking about we need to send more billions. You know, we're going to do a cake sale. We're going to do a bake sale. And we're going to take all the money from our offering plates and we're going to send it in a care package to Israel. You know, they always seem to be doing real well. But it's just sad. They see the same name, so it must be the same thing. It's the same thing as the sea. It's annoying. You know, I mean, I talk a lot about how I get wore out and I just don't have the patience to deal with atheist spurgs. But, you know, these people are at least as annoying, maybe more so, because it's the same closed mind, you know, like talking to a brick wall thing, you know. You try talking to me, you're like, well, you know, why do you, you know, well, it's got the same name. And you see, it says in the Bible that if you bless Israel, that God will bless you. So if we want to all be able to have a good economy and we want America to be strong and we want God to bless our military while they go and fight for our freedom in all these hundreds of places around the world that we don't even know about. If we want God to keep doing that, then we've got to bless Israel. And what does blessing Israel mean? It means we're going to send them another $48 billion. Because God said so. I went to church and my preacher told me God wants us to bless Israel. You don't have to wonder about what's he talking about. Who's this Israel he's talking about? I turned on the news and it says right there, Israel is once again defending themselves against these bloodthirsty 12-year-old Palestinians throwing rocks at them, and they carpet bombed them with white phosphorus. It's just like God sending hellfire down on Sodom and Gomorrah. He's sending hellfire in the form of Israeli jets dropping white phosphorus. If that ain't God blessing Israel, I don't know what is. We got to send them money. How are they going to pay for that? I saw this ad on TV about poor starving Jews that survived the Holocaust. They're needing our help. These poor Jews over there in Israel, let me tell you something. They're suffering. You just don't know how much they're suffering. And if we don't send them money, then God's going to get really pissed at us. We don't want God being pissed at us now, do we? Because it could mean things could get really bad in America. But, you know, not like they're bad now. You think child trannies and nonstop gay pride parades is bad, buddy? Let me tell you what. God's still blessing America. Not really. This, dealing with these people, it's every bit at least as frustrating. And like I say, I always say I don't have the patience to deal with atheist burgers, but honestly, I don't have the patience to deal with these people either, because the level of moron is just beyond my comprehension. I just can't. I mean, I have no problem with people just simply ignorant about something. Now, there's nothing wrong. There's a lot of things I'm ignorant about. I'm not so prideful and arrogant. But see, to understand that, to learn anything, you got to understand, you know, you always got to be open to the fact that you may not, you may be ignorant about it. You may think you understand, but you may not. You may be ignorant about it. But to just be so blatantly stupid, I mean, you know, just so blatantly stupid. Same name, same place. Like I said, by that very same reasoning, then every Mexican landscaper who is named Jesus is our Lord and Savior, because same name, by that same very logic. Same name. It's a failure. And I shouldn't be so exasperated with these people. I really shouldn't. And you have to understand, when I say all this, I really kind of feel like I'm speaking for y'all, because I think y'all probably have the same exasperation. You know, it's not going on and on about myself. I feel like I'm just giving a voice to all of you, because you're all exasperated. And it all works together, doesn't it? You know, it's like the stupidity reinforces itself. Because, like, if you have the unpleasant, you know, the unpleasant opportunity to deal with somebody who's just a hardcore non-believer, they will sit here and point to these people, to these other morons who go on about Israel is the Bible because same name. And it's like you're fighting a war. You're fighting a war of moron on two fronts. You know, it's just. But yeah, no, it's a failure. It's a failure of those who are supposed to teach. It's a failure of teaching. It's a failure of preaching. You know, when you have preachers and teachers that intentionally promote this doctrine, I mean, it's a sign of subversion and crushing, because this isn't that hard to understand. It's not that hard to put it together and to figure it out. You know, it's one thing for people, I guess, just not to get it. But for people that are basically, they're getting a payoff somewhere to promote this stuff. You know, they're getting a kickback, they're getting a commission, getting like a sales commission. I don't know. It's just utterly disgusting. That's really disgusting. You know, we live in these crazy, crazy world times and, you know, end days sort of stuff. It really is. It's end days sort of stuff. But, you know, when things get crazy like this, people tend to focus on prophecy, you know, namely the book of Revelation. That is like the, you know, and you can find, you can look online and you can find like just countless essays analyzing this or that or whatever part, you know, of the book of Revelation, people trying to understand it, people trying to figure it out, people trying to put it together, and this means this now, and this means that now, and see, this means that the U.S. is now going to do this, and the next thing that's going to happen is going to do. And I was thinking about this the other day, and it really is, I think, the problem is what we fail to understand, what we fail to wrap our minds around is I got to thinking about, because what do we tend to think of prophecy as? A prediction for the future, right? If you went up to the average person, probably Christian believer or not, and you asked them, hey, define prophecy for me, you would probably get something along the line, some version of, you know, a prediction for the future. This is somebody predicting the future. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I think that we've got it all wrong. You know, I'd stumbled across what got me thinking about this. I'd stumbled across this long-winded article, you know, trying to decode a certain set of verses from the book of Revelation. And they were twisting themselves all in knots, as people are apt to do. And this got me to thinking, I think we've got the concept of prophecy all wrong. I really do. Because as far as what's the point of it? What is the point of prophecy? And I think we've got it all wrong, because we have it in our heads that the point of prophecy is to predict the future. is that God is telling us, is warning us what's coming. Now, there are instances in the Old Testament, and this is important as well. There's instances in the Old Testament where that was the case. When you had the prophets come forward and say, look, if you don't stop doing what you're doing, if you don't stop rebelling against God, the Lord is going to do this. He's going to bring Nebuchadnezzar in. He's going to let him come in. He's going to destroy your country. All your rich nobles who think they're so much better than everybody and they think they're so much smarter than everybody, they're all going to be enslaved and drug off to captivity. You see, it was very specific. And God told the prophets, he said, look, you got to tell them this so that they can't say nobody warned us. But you see, that's like a different kind of prophecy. Because, like, for instance, when Jesus came and he was fulfilling the words of the prophets that were foretelling the coming of Christ. You see, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's several kinds of prophecy. And you had the prophecy where they were told to, you know, go forward and warn about this specific thing that's coming in the fairly near future. I'm giving them enough time to quit their nonsense, but they're not going to. But go ahead and warn them anyway. That way, when I destroy them, they can't say nobody warned us. But generally, when we think about prophecy, we think of these long-term predictions. You know, this is going to happen. Like, for instance, when you have prophecy in the Old Testament that's pointing forward to the coming of Jesus Christ. And of course, for us, where everybody focuses on the book of Revelation. And I do. I think we've got it all wrong thinking about prophecy like God predicting the future. I mean, put it this way, if the book of Revelation, you know, is to tell us exactly what is going to happen, then why wouldn't they just tell it to us outright? Now, to kind of answer my own question, but to not to, I guess so, to say, to kind of rebut that devil's advocate sort of thing, when John was writing Revelation, he was this went out in the form of letters and they were reading his mail. So there are some scholars and such who say that the reason it's written like that is coded language. So they would just look at it. The people who are going through his mail would look at it and say, well, this guy's just nuts. He's talking about seeing these flying things in the sky and flames coming out of people's mouths. He's just crazy and could go through. And there are biblical scholars who say that, you know, mostly what John was doing here was shit talking, you know, the Romans, and it was coded language to get through there. You know, whether you believe that or not isn't the point here. The thing is, if prophecy, long-term prophecy, serves the purpose of just telling us what's going to happen before it does, then God would tell us clearly. You know, it would be very clear. He would say, you know, but instead, it's always a little vague. Why is that? Why is that? And there were times, like, for instance, this is really highlighted and demonstrated time and time again when you read the accounts of Jesus Christ walking on the face of this earth, because he was fulfilling prophecy. And he would say, this is to fulfill the words of the prophets. Because, and even his dudes, even his guys that were there with him all the time, they didn't see it. They didn't understand it. He would say it outright. This is to fulfill the words of the prophets. You see, I don't think prophecy is primarily about predicting the future. I think prophecy serves, because we look back, because like you read this and you look back and you're like, well, why didn't the people, especially his guys around him, why didn't they look at this and understand this clearly? You know, the prophecies coming true. You know, why didn't they see it? Why didn't they understand it? See, I think the point of prophecy is to basically almost be viewed in hindsight. In other words, prophecy isn't so much about telling the future or predicting the future. Prophecy serves as a signpost, as a mile marker on the highway of time, on the flow of time. It is not telling you, oh, well, you know, it's not primarily even to, you know, to tell you this is going to come to pass, although that is a part of it. It's that when you go past it and you then realize it, you say, okay, we've passed that mile marker. Jesus Christ fulfilled the prophecies of the coming of the Messiah. So as Christian believers, we're not sitting around looking for the coming of the Messiah, because we understand we've passed that mile marker. We look at that. We've gone past that. Now that's been fulfilled. We don't have to keep looking for it to show up because we know we've already gone past it. It's like traveling down a road. And you know that before you get to this town, you got to go through the other town. When you realize you've gone through that other town, you're not looking for it anymore. You can look forward to the next thing. I think that's really the point of prophecy by and large, is to serve as a mile marker. To know that, well, that's been fulfilled. We don't need to sit around. As Christian believers, we don't sit around and go, I hope the Messiah comes soon. We need the Messiah to show up. We understand that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, the Son of God. You know, I mean, we understand that when Jesus talked about the temple being destroyed and rebuilt in 3 days, he was talking about his own death and resurrection. I mean, the mile marker's been passed, so we don't have to keep looking for that. We understand, well, that's happened, so next up we're looking forward to the next thing. Anyway, I think if you view prophecy as just a mile marker so we understand that we've gone past a certain point, I think that makes more sense. You know, I do. I think that makes more sense. And thus, you know, one doesn't need to sit around and spend hours upon hours making their eyes bleed, trying to transpose the book of Revelation across every single aspect of our world. I mean, we do know these are end times. Jesus was pretty specific and real vague about what the end times would look like. And we're obviously in the end times. I believe the end times it's over a larger period of time than we understand, you know, because here, especially in America, especially people today, you know, we have this short time preference problem, you know, so we read the end times and we're thinking like the end times is like 2 years, you know. The end times is going to be like a week and a half or something, you know, but it's like a TV season. We can't think beyond that. The end times is going to be about the length of your average TV season. So 14 episodes of the end times and that'll be over. But I do. I think the end times is a much broader. It expands all the way back to Christ ascending to heaven after his resurrection. That began the end times. The end times began then, you know, to now, because this is the last segment in this experiment, in this exercise of humanity in the realm of time on earth. But we don't. We have these short time preferences, you know. End times. Last 2 weeks. Makes people get confused. Yeah, I always do. I try to read the Bible. I try to read Old Testament, New Testament, you know, and I'm always going back and forth. That's my personal Bible study, Bible reading routine. I was reading in the book of Chronicles, you know, and David had ordered a census for Israel to count the people. And this really angered God, you know, and God got mad about it. And I was just thinking about, you know, a census, you know, imagine it comes around. This is how far I was thinking of it in terms of this is how far we've fallen, because God clearly found the idea of imposing a census as repugnant. And this, imagine if you came out and you said, you know, I'm protesting the government. I'm protesting the government. This government is wicked and evil. And God is against it. And people would say, really? What for? And you were like, the census. People would be like, get out of here. The census. What do you care about the census? This is how far we are. Because if you brought up the census, I mean, there are so many things to be outraged about and offended about. And so many things you could point to that are just absolutely and utterly wicked and evil that this government puts out. If you pointed to the census, people would just simply laugh at you. and you know, understandably so, but it tells you how far we've fallen, doesn't it? I mean, if the census, if performing a census is repugnant to the Lord, then how far away, how far down the tubes are we? You know, it kind of brings me around again to thinking about the mistake people make, and primarily regular Christian people, normie Christian normies. you know, they'll make this mistake. They will, you know, because if you point out somebody that's doing the whole God Bless America song and dance, and you ask them what for, why would God do that? You point to all the wickedness and evil that this country commits at home and abroad. And if they try to defend that position, you usually wind up with some form of, well, at least we are. Yeah, yes, yes, that's true. But at least we are still the most Christian nation on earth. Now, you have to set aside the ignorance of that, because I think it's very arguable that Russia is a more Christian nation than the U.S. by a lot. But even setting that aside for a moment, we're going to set that aside because that's a whole different discussion for a whole different day. Setting that aside, they will usually come out and say, well, yes, but everybody else is worse. You know, we are the most Christian nation on earth. We're the most Christian nation on earth. So God should bless America, because at least we're not godless like, you know, these other peoples. And again, the ignorance in those statements is just mind-boggling, because it gets everything backwards. It does. It gets everything backwards. You understand? If you're a quote-unquote Christian nature, even just nominally, if you're just making the claim that you're a Christian nation, that means you're held to a higher standard. When the Lord got enough of Israel's BS and sent Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in to destroy it, as he said he was going to, do these people think that Nebuchadnezzar was like this godly man that the Lord favored? I mean, the guy was the definition of just a horrible, wicked. I mean, he was just a horrible heathen type of person. You don't understand the point. Israel is supposed to be the people of God, so they're held to a higher standard. You see, Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians were not good people. They were not godly people. You're held to a higher standard. Well, at least we're still the most Christian nation on earth, so God should bless us because we're better than these. You don't understand. That means a higher standard. It means you got to be way better. It's a higher standard. He's not holding people who are non-Christian nations. He's not holding them to his standard, because they're not claiming his standard. I mean, in other words, God is not going to hold a Muslim nation to God's standards, because they're not claiming, you know, they're not claiming to be Christian nations. You know, they're not making that claim. So he's not holding them to that standard. God bless America. Oh, it is. It's all frustrating. It's all tiring. I mean, you read these things. And it is. It's sad that people are so turned off as Christian believers. It's so sad that people are so turned off from reading the Old Testament, because there's so much there, so much information there. I mean, you might say, well, what does God dealing with an ancient nation of Israel have to do with us? Well, because the ancient nation of Israel were classified as what? God's chosen people. Who are we today as Christian believers? We are God's chosen people. What do we learn when we read God's interactions with his former chosen people? Is we understand the patterns. See, God doesn't change. So we understand the patterns of how the Lord works, how he interacts. If he held Israel to a higher standard in the Old Testament, it means he holds Christian believers to a higher standard post New Testament. It's revelant. We understand how God works. When you read the Old Testament long enough, you start seeing the patterns, and you look at the patterns there and the patterns down, and you understand that God operates in these patterns. He operates in this more or less this same manner. So it is revelant. And you read this history and you read the mistakes. You read the mistakes people. Well, you have these people who say, you know, it's all made up. It's all made up. Everything in the Bible's made up. And one of the things I think really counters that is, because if it's just made up, people will write their own history to look good. You know what I'm saying? They'll write their own history to where they were all saints. If you're just sitting there making it up. I'm talking about just the Old Testament in the form of historical records of men. You know, I'm setting aside, you know, the God, the spiritual nature stuff, of course, because it is all actually intertwined. But the thing is, people by their very nature, if they're just writing stuff about themselves or about their own people, they're going to make it sound as best as possible, right? They're going to sugarcoat it. They're just going to kind of write out the really bad stuff. But you read the Old Testament and the historical accounts of Israel, and they don't do that. You know, I mean, it's all laid bare. You know, all the wicked, all the failings of the kings, even the preferred king. I mean, David's failings, the accounts of David are very interesting because, I mean, there he is, flaws and everything. I mean, there it is, flaws, screw-ups, sins, mistakes. And it's all laid out there. It's all laid bare out there. People just writing a story about themselves, even a historical record, will whitewash, you know, the atrocities, the bad things. You know, I mean, who's going to write a story of, you know, one of the icons of their people, such as Moses? You know, and include the part where the guy is basically a murderer. I mean, he killed somebody. Who's going to do that? Just going to write that out. That doesn't matter because he did this other stuff. And yet it's included. Same with King David. Who's going to write an account of a guy who's one of the most prominent kings of your people and leave in the parts where he killed some guy, had some guy killed so that he could screw his wife? I mean, that's not the sort of thing you include. You make everybody sound like, you know, human nature is to write these things to where you make these people like, you know, these saints or something, you know, how am I trying to put it? These Hollywood level good guys, you know, you don't write the flaws in. You just put the good stuff. You make them larger than life. That's one of the things I really enjoy about reading when you read these historical accounts is because the flaws are in there. It wouldn't seem like real people if that wasn't the case. It would just feel like you were reading some sort of fictional novel or something. But the fact that the flaws are in there, you know, and you realize these guys accomplish these great things. These guys, heard, you know, in some cases, literally heard the voice of the Lord and did these great things that they personally themselves didn't think they were capable of doing. And you realize that, yeah, they were flawed people. You know, they were just people, flaws and all, mistakes and all, some of these big mistakes. And yet, they were able to accomplish these things. They were able to do these things. I just, me personally, I find that stuff interesting. I find it to be good stuff. Anyway, yeah, we're going to have to go ahead and get on out of here. Hopefully today's rambling format in the Christian specific segment was to your liking. I hope it was. I enjoyed the visit, and as always, we're looking for the whole point is just to do, you know, a Christian specific, Christian centered talk. You know, I mean, a lot of times we'll sit here and read Bible verses and discuss what we think that means. You know, as for ourselves as Christian believers, that is the general format. But some days I just like talk about these things that we face day in, day out as Christian believers. Like, you know, dealing with people that are just so ignorant about what they claim to be their own faith, things like this. You know, we remind ourselves that we're all in the same boat together. It's okay. We're all dealing with the same stuff. But anyway, like I said, hopefully you got something out of it. And it means something for you. But we're going to go ahead. We're going to get on out of here. Thank you once again. Those of you who financially support the show, means a lot, makes a big difference. You may think it doesn't make a big difference, but it really does. It really is appreciated. We're going to go ahead and get on out here. And we'll see you next time right here for the Parish of the Patriots.